This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the March 8, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We're talking about finances today. What financial planners have learned from the pandemic? And who best to lead us other than Karen Schaefer, CFP? How long have we been doing these seminars and webinars, Karen?
Well, I stopped counting when we were counting decades. So let's just say a good long while.
Yeah, and it's been a great ride, and hope it continues, and I'm sure that it will. Anyway, Karen, I'd imagine during the investments and the pandemic care, if you will, you probably developed some strategies or responses. I'd imagine your responses will vary with the anxiousness of the caller.
Well, of course, you know, it's one of those things. I got a lot of phone calls from reporters in February and March of last year, and they were all looking for the bad news story. Bad news generally being a little more newsworthy than good news about everybody who was going to have to come out of retirement or never be able to retire because life as we know it has just ended. And I had to remind them that even though as a financial planner, I certainly didn't anticipate a pandemic, the plans stayed on track. So the first lesson that most financial planners learned was, wow, this stuff really does work. If we're building solid financial plans, they can withstand a beating and still stay on course. So what was going on last year was the stock market was in free fall and everybody was hyperventilating and nobody was breathing, could envision a brighter day, right? But nobody working with a financial planner worth their CFP designation had money in the stock market that we had to pull out to use, right? That would have been 5-10 years into a free fall, a pandemic, that we might have to say, wow, I guess we didn't have enough set aside. But the number one lesson we all learned was good planning works, but good planning includes enough flexibility to withstand things that we just can't anticipate. Whether they're good news or bad news, we want to build the flexibility into the plan. So, go ahead.
So the flexibility, would that vary with the distance between the age that you're dealing with now with them and when they're going to, quote, retire, 55, 60 or so? So does the dynamics change within the plan?
It does, always. So, you know, it's called personal financial planning for a reason. And some of it is just based on the numbers. You know, what do we need to do to get you where you want to be? And some of it's based on how people feel about it, right? I'm a human being. I know how to crunch numbers, but I'm not going to make all my decisions based on the numbers. Sometimes I just really want to do it because it makes me happy. Or sometimes I really don't want to do it because it makes me anxious. So the first thing is to recognize that a lot of times a younger person may not have a lot of flexibility with their cash flow, but they have tons of time to take investment risk. I go to the person who's on the doorstep of retirement and needs or wants to spend the money they've accumulated as a young retiree. We don't have the time to take the volatility, but from a cash flow point of view, we probably, you know, the mortgage is down to a dull roar, the kids, if we raised a family, kind of launch our responsibilities behind us, and we can get a lot of what we need out of cash flow, and we don't have to be panicking as much about our investments, or maybe we've reallocated the investments so they're just not so much rock and roll, a little more easy listening in there.
Well, you've tutored your clients well over the years, but let's say that there's a certain percent that are anxious. And you know, as anxious as they might be, they're good people, they can't help themselves. Yeah. It sounds like me talking, but anyway, how do you then hopefully calm their nerves. And I'd imagine over a relatively short period of time, not a long period of time, they go, I guess maybe I was a little too anxious. But what gets them off the ledge?
Well, you know, it's different for everybody. Some people are just wanted to call and say, we're still okay, right? And other people, I really did feel like we were walking them in off the ledge, and they really felt like we had to do something. And there's not a lot to do when the market's dropping in value and you don't need the money. We should talk about something more pleasant, right? But for somebody who's not going to be able to sleep at night, we'll say, all right, let's think about this. Do we want to take it all out at the worst value we've seen in years? Or could I talk you into just maybe let's just take a little bit out, put that money in cash or in the G fund if we're talking about the thrift savings plan. And they'll say, yeah, let's just take a little bit out. I said, all right, I'm with you. I want you to sleep at night. I want you to have confidence in your plan. But before we really sell at a bad price, could we have a plan for getting back in? When do you think, you know, it's always good to buy low, sell high. Let's not wait until we remember we were going to put this money back in the market. Let's proactively make a little plan. We can talk about it again. You can change your mind if you want to. But 6 months into this, 12 months into this, let's have a plan for slowly but surely taking money that you really should have invested because it's for the long term. And that seems to work better for people than just saying, look, come on, work with me here. You don't need this money. Why are you taking it out of the market? I also have learned that, you know what, some people really are willing to live on less if it means they can sleep at night. And as long as I don't think they're going to run out and be a burden to them, to their kids or the taxpayers, it's their choice, right? Not what I'm going to do with my money, but it's their choice. So we just have to assess it. Do we have enough money there? And or can we come up with an action item that is sort of a compromise between really the biggest mistake they could ever make and something that's not perfect, but it'll still get them there.
All right. Now, how about on the other side of the landscape? Somebody with a mindset, they want to live today. Because they've heard about if they don't, they could lose tomorrow.
You know, another way to phrase that, Bob, is that the future's not guaranteed, right? And I've kind of I learned that early in life, that as much as I'm a planner and as much as I have the tools and the education and the experience to do really good planning, it's not all guaranteed. So it's sort of the work hard, play hard. We have to have the reasonable balance for today without ignoring the future. And the cool thing about just putting some money away for that future, that money goes to work. I had an example I did in one of your NITP webinars where I had twins, Kevin and Karen Kelly, because that was my brother's name. And I was the smart twin, Karen Kelly, growing up. I started investing $2,000 a year in this example when I was graduated from university at the age of 21. My brother, Kevin, didn't get the memo for a while, let's just say. I stopped investing at age 40. I'd been there, done that. He starts investing at age 41. And then at the age of 65, I have almost $650,000 and he's got a little less than 150. So it doesn't take a lot of compromise with my standard of living today to give me huge payoffs in the future. And I think if more people just played with a calculator, and hey, there's one on tsp.gov to just show I don't have to put every single dime I have to the point where I'm never having any fun, right? Into my retirement account or my off into the future account. A little bit goes a really long way when you've got time on your side.
Great comment. And let's go back to, you mentioned TSP. So the TSP website, does it provide somebody with the tools that maybe isn't so proficient in knowing what to ask the computer? Can they walk through something?
The only Yeah, where it gets confusing, I think, for some people. So TSP.gov is one of the best websites out there. It's much more user-friendly than it was, and it anticipates what people are going to need to know and how to play with it. So I encourage anybody to use it, even if you're not a Fed, if your 401k provider doesn't have something there for your old 401k, the numbers are numbers here. So if you go to that website, they're going to ask you, and you want to know what difference does it make if I'm putting in more than the 5% that's getting matched in my thrift plan. So let's just assume we're going to put in an extra $100 a pay or $2,600 a year. Let's see if that really makes a big difference. And they'll ask you, all right, how much do you already have in the thrift plan? And you'll calculate increasing how much you're putting in now, and then just increase it by $100 a pay. But the one that's going to confuse people, the other variable they want from you is, what's your rate of return? And you've got to estimate that, right? So you don't want to just pull a number out of nowhere. You want to put an informed variable in there. So look at how you've got your money invested. If you're doing the G fund, we can go look up. So what is that G fund earning? It's a little more than zero, but it's not more than two, right? So you put in a number for that. Or we look at what's been the history of the average rate of return of the F fund or the CS&I funds or some combination. And whatever the average rate of return has been, this is just me. I always round it down just a little bit because I would like to be pleasantly surprised if I'm doing a calculation as opposed to be sorely disappointed. So if it looks like, what, that can't be right. How much did that C fund make last year? Didn't I know 2020 was the worst year since history of mankind? It did double digits last year. So I wouldn't put in that. I'd put in maybe 7 or 8%. If I'm doing mostly stocks, I'll try that. And then I calculate to see what my return is and then go back and play with it again. Well, all right, what if I put in a little bit more? Or what if I had... I wanted to retire a little earlier or worked another couple of years. And you start to see that it's almost the eighth wonder of the world, this compounding of interest on investment. Once I get the money in there and go for growth, right, really do become an investor because I got time to do this, I can build a really good thrift savings plan. But you have to know that, it's almost as if you don't understand how just putting money into an investment and leaving it alone helps build a pretty nice account, you're much less motivated to do it, right? So you have to play with those numbers a little bit.
So we're going to take a break here, but on the backside of the break, Schaefer Financial, Rick and Karen, and let's talk about the people that take the first step, but they take it maybe in a really boring fund, if you will, and then to get them out of that. But let's visit that on the backside of okay. The good folks from WEPA telling us what they can do for the listeners.
Life doesn't always go as planned. WEPA provides group term life insurance for over 46,000 civilian federal employees and has been insuring the future of feds for more than 75 years. With WEPA, you can find coverage that meets your changing needs and adjust whenever you're ready. Apply for your policy today by visiting waepa.org. WEPA.org.
Life insurance on your terms. Group Term Life Insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WEPA, feds can apply for up to $1.5 million in coverage, regardless of salary. WEPA offers life insurance protection for feds by feds. Apply by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here talking with Karen Schaefer, Certified Financial Planner. I've worked together for many years. I would say primarily when we work, we're talking to federal employees at mid-career, beginning career, and pre-retirement classes. And prior to the break, we talked about different things. If you're just coming in, you need to listen to the first part. But Karen, Let's pick up where we left off. And I think the general comment was TSV missteps, but we weren't really looking on the negative. We were looking at the negative, but trying to turn it positive.
Right. Well, you know, a thrift misstep that happened to too many people in 2020 was they just, you know, it was so frightening to hear that this pandemic was going to be, was so unpredictable and so unknown and yet so worldwide that it was almost a knee-jerk, couldn't help myself reaction for so many people to get out of the market. So if you're thinking about the thrift savings plan, that was doing an interfund transfer out of the CSNI stock funds and into that government bond fund, the G fund, right? If I met a young woman through a webinar, right, we're socially distant, and she asked the question, I went to my supervisor, I'm 28 years old, and I said, it was March, you know, should I get out of the stock? I've got all my money in the C fund. And the supervisor said, yes, you should get out. Ooh. And so she moved it all and at a bad price, right? It was a down price. She moved it in March. And she said, I'm listening to you now, Karen. Now that I understand how investments work a little bit better, I think I made a mistake. Do you think it was a mistake? And I said, you know, I can't go backwards and fix things, but I have a couple observations. One, if you're going to take investment advice from somebody, make sure they're qualified to give it, which is not to say that her supervisor is a bad supervisor or even a bad person, but very unlikely to have much investment advice experience much or credential, right? The second thing is, all right, so now where are we? We got all your money in the G fund. And you're in your 20s, it's time to make sure that we get this right. This money does belong in the market. So you have two steps. One is easy. Just make sure all the new money is going right into stock. So whether we pick the 2065 L fund or we divide it between CSNI or you just decide to keep it all in the C fund, any of those would be vast improvements and very appropriate for a 28-year-old. So she's got to make her own decision, but this is what she needs to think about. And that would be, it's called the reallocation according to thrift. When you tell the thrift board how you want your future money from future paychecks being allocated, that's the reallocation form. But she's got all that money sitting in G that she has to improve through interfund transfers. So one of the things that investment advisors learned a long time ago, it's part of our job to get the drama out of decision-making in investments. Worst thing I could do is to tell somebody, you know, the stock market goes up way more than it goes down. For the love of God, just put that $100,000 that you've got in the G fund into the stock fund. And then, of course, what would happen? Just everybody's luck, right? The 100,000 drops to 70 on a very, really dramatic day. They'll think back to my advice and think she was an idiot. I belonged in the G fund. They'll never invest again. I've scarred them, right? So we work with human beings and human nature. I would say, you know, a professional investment advisor would likely, during tumultuous, uncertain times with a young, inexperienced investor, move slowly from cash into the market. In the thrift plan, what does that mean? You're going to divide the money in your G fund by 12, 18, heck, 24 months, and once a month, do an interfund transfer of that amount into the market. And that way, it's not some big dramatic, oh, I hope I'm not making a mistake kind of decision. It's called dollar cost averaging. We're minimizing as best we can some of the volatility that the market gives us, and we're actually putting ourselves in a position to perhaps even enhance our performance a bit by buying whenever, no matter what, we're buying every single month. You know what? Some months we might actually buy a lot of shares when the market's down. Other months we may just be smiling because, oh, wow, the market's up. How great is that? Because I have money in the market. So it manages human nature risk. It manages investment volatility risk. It's what the professionals do, especially during uncertain times with inexperienced investors.
I really like what you just said, and it parallels exactly what you have, if you will, on our bullet points as to discussion items, and it's called Embracing the Pause.
Oh, yeah.
What a great title.
Well, you know, I tell everybody I'm at the perfect age for a pandemic because I feel like I've kind of been there, done that. But it was a conversation I had, Bob, with an awful lot of clients that were so anxious. You know, you were asking me, how do you get people to come in off the ledge? And for some people, it was just a matter of, you know, you're not commuting. You know, you have an ex, you're fortunate. What are the things we're fortunate about? An awful lot of people kept their jobs in this marketplace. An awful lot of people saved some money because I don't know about you, but I am in yoga pants, literally, as we speak. The Dress for Success wardrobe did not get replenished. It didn't even visit the dry cleaner. I haven't been parking my car all over town. I haven't even put gas in my car. So one of the fun things we did, and this would be, fall under my definition of embracing the pause, let's do something powerful with that money. You know, if you have a little extra cash flow and you've had a problem in your personal financial plan, this is a time to fix it. Had struggled to get the credit cards paid off, or still had some nagging student loans, or some deferred maintenance on the house. This is the time to be, let's systematically, proactively grab that extra money and set it aside for we're fixing this problem once and for all. Other people, it was time to be generous, right? I feel so awful. I hear all these horrible stories, or, you know, I'm fine because I'm a Fed and I'm still working, but my brother had all his money in his family restaurant, and what are we going to do? I said, look, there are smart ways to help people with money and not so smart. Let's talk that through and let's embrace this opportunity for you to be generous in a smart way. If they're going to lose the restaurant anyway, putting more money into that restaurant isn't going to help, but putting money in their retirement plan so they have some funds, that might work, or helping them build the emergency fund, or just being able to say, I got the cost for the kids. I'm paying for daycare, or I'm paying for a tutor for you. For the people who are working at home with young families, I mean, that is tough, tough stuff. How could I be generous with them and give them that cushion that they need for a little extra help around their house? Because I'm embracing the pause. I'm able to embrace the pause.
Wow. When you work with these folks, some people receive the information and understand it. Some receive and kind of sort of understand it. And then there's a third group that, yeah. What do you do with visuals? I mean, like the TSP website, you can press some buttons and if I'm not mistaken, and you can visualize what it would mean. And it might take a little time to get used to putting in and getting out what they want. But the visual, it seems to me, and you know, I work in the tax world, and I say, okay, if you do X dollars and you get a tax deduction, this is what it means to you. And if you want to put that in an investment, look at the synergy of this.
Right. So you're right. You know, everybody processes information differently, and some people are very, very visual. You know, Bob, other people are just really feely people, right? The logic or the need or the visual is secondary to how they feel about something. So one of the things I've learned over my career is that there's an underused question. The why, you know, why are you worried about that? Could you help me understand what's keeping you from making this decision? What's the biggest worry? Which of the kids are you most concerned about? All variations on the why are you behaving like this kind of question. Because once you unlock that, two important things have happened. They now realize that you're trying to understand them and give them the best personal advice. And you now have sort of a roadmap to say, I know you're worried about your youngest, but you know what? We don't want to deny that youngest an opportunity to feel a sense of accomplishment, right? We're gonna do this together, and I'm now ready to help them take smaller steps, because I've asked them why questions, and they're more inclined to take those smaller steps. We're still pointing in the right direction because they realize it's not all or nothing, right? I don't have to put all my money in the stock market and lie awake at night, or I don't have to put all my money into an emergency fund in case I have an emergency, when what I really want to do is have a little fun right now. There's so many great ways to compromise that fit your personality, that fit your learning style, whether you need to see it visually or you need to hear it a few times. Some people just process slowly. I get a lot of, you know, I've been thinking about what you said, Karen, and, you know, you were right. We could do a little bit more this way. And I just love those follow-ups, right? Because in the moment, all you can do is hope you're getting through and use your skills and experience. But it's ultimately personal financial planning is we've got to deal with the person where they are.
You may remember back when we first met, it was a fair number of years ago, and we were at Tinker Air Force Base, and we were inside a movie theater that was also used for a seminar hall. And if you stood down at the bottom, that's where all the Coca-Cola and syrupy stuff was on the floor, and you couldn't walk anyway.
It was a little sticky.
And I listened to you. Back then, I was, a CD and money market and don't want to take any risk. And I put a toe out on the ledge, thanks to you. Maybe now I've got a foot there, but I don't have the toe back inside. But I just never forget that. And
but it's so nice of you to share that, though, Bob, because so many people believe that only the above average the intellectually gifted person can get money in investing. And yet I work with a lot of PhD economists at the IMF. I've worked with the rocket scientists. I work with Bob Lyons, CPA extraordinaire. And all of their training, all of your upbringing and training didn't teach you a darn thing about the miracle of compound investing and that it's a reasonable step to take. I didn't necessarily grow up with it either, but I was fortunate enough to find Rick Schaefer, who knew two things. One, he wanted to be self-employed, and two, he was really kind of interested in investing. He wanted his money to grow. And it was because of him that I thought, all right, do I really want to go to law school? Maybe I will try this financial planning stuff. So I was learning it, not because it was a passion of mine. I was learning it because it seemed like a real good means to an end. What did I want? I wanted to give a happy, comfortable life to my children. And I didn't want to worry about money. That's why I learned about investing. I just don't want to worry about money. I don't think having a lot of money makes you a good person. I know worrying about money makes you an unhappy person. So I don't want to worry about it. I guess I'll learn investing.
Okay, let's push that a little bit more. One of the bullet points here says strategies for coping with reduced income. So we're talking probably more here retirement income.
Not necessarily. So early in the pandemic, a lot of people lost income. Right. So a lot of people lost jobs, not so much in the federal marketplace, but there were several families where it just was untenable. Right. If you had young children at home that all of a sudden couldn't go to daycare or school and you were trying to work, that was a recipe for disaster. I've got a daughter, Caitlin, who works for Schaefer Financial, but she's out of Houston with three kids. And we talk several times a day. We work very closely together. And I said, how's it going? This is not sustainable. And she was on the edge. So in a lot of, she's got a pretty flexible job and a really good boss, but not everybody does. Yeah, not everybody does, Bob. And so we just, I'd be getting a call from my younger client saying, this is not sustainable. Okay, we're going to have to back it off. We're going to have to either go to part-time for a while or give up the job for a while. If you look at the data, how many two-income families really had to cut back to take care of kids, it was a big thing. So we had to come up with some strategies for people who had reduced income. whether they actually lost a job or had to make the only sane decision for their mental and family health to reduce income. What's the difference between fixed overhead and discretionary spending, right? We got real granular with, you can stop this for a while, stop that for a while, rent out an extra bedroom, give up the, you know, how many expenses when we've got good cash flow were we just paying without even, and handling without thinking twice about it, redirect money that things we couldn't spend money on anymore, that'll go here, really helping people get down to, this is our subsistence level. You got to have a little extra, right? Or we'll go crazy. What were the ways to, and it was a little different family to family, but we were really actively coaching people through, this is okay to stop putting a little bit in your thrift plan as long as we revisit every 6 months, right? Because we don't want to forget to come back to that. We're always trying to avoid the credit card debt. So we would reduce expenses, and we actually found ways for more income. I had people sell their baseball card collection and clean out the basement and let's get that all sold. I had people taking on little side gigs for a while just to acknowledge, look, this is what happens. You have reduced income, and we don't want to be paying for that for 20 years. You start digging a hole, it takes a long time to climb out of it. We did, we shared daycare, let's get our little germ pod expanded a little bit here, and maybe you could watch the neighbor's kids for a half a day, and they can watch your kids for half a day, and that way you're both only burning the midnight oil for an hour and a half instead of 3 hours. We did lots of creative things.
Wow. Karen, before we take a break, because I always forget to do this till the end, excuse me, how does somebody contact Schaefer Financial to learn more?
Well, as I started to say now, we are Googleable. If you look up Karen Schaefer, the only thing you have to know is that Schaefer has every letter you could possibly squeeze in there. So I'm S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, Karen Schaefer, and Schaefer Financial is in Rockville, Maryland. So we're pretty easy to find in that world wide web.
All righty. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about cautions about the CARES Act. But now we'll take a break.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Well, welcome back to the Home Stretch on March 8th, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. And we're talking with Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner, principal with Schaefer Financial, boots on the ground knowledge. And I would also say you can take a subject that many people really don't grasp, and you use examples that are normal. You know, it's not a seven-figure this or that. So we're down the home stretch. So what should we be cautious about with regard to the CARE Act?
So that CARES Act that was passed in March, in the middle of our most uncertain times, allowed people to get at their retirement money without a penalty, and to either take a larger than normally allowed loan, or to actually take a withdrawal. And if the withdrawal was coming out of a traditional retirement account, like your traditional thrift or your traditional 401k, it would trigger income tax, but without the penalty. But then you were also given 3 years to pay that back. And so, you know, I'm sure that as it was being crafted up on the Hill with all the best intentions in the world, people are going to need this money, so we have to let them have at it. It was yet another example of, just because the tax law allows me to do something doesn't mean I should assume it's a great idea for me. We got to make this personal. So I think, Bob, you and I played with the numbers a couple of different ways. And some of our financial planning journals came out with articles that just showed, wow, that taking money out of your retirement plan to deal with, at the time, we didn't know how ugly things were going to be, right? How long it was going to take to recover. But now I think everybody can see we're getting to a better time as it relates to the pandemic, and even our economy is coming back in surprising ways and not surprising ways. I think that taking the money out would mean that people would be paying for it for the rest of their life. It was, in other words, the worst choice for finding the bridge to better days financially, as opposed to being the first place to reach. And it just worried me so much when it was almost, you know, well, I've got the money there, I need money, let me go get it. It's a classic financial planning mistake. We get hyper-focused on a decision with a deadline, and we get hyper-focused on need this much, there's that much, therefore I'm going to connect these two dots, where the best thing to do was to step way, way back, put lots of pieces in play, and let's put the puzzle together a few different ways to see what's really best. And rarely was it best to take money out of a retirement account. Some people don't realize that, you know, taking a short-term loan and paying a little bit of interest over a short term was a way better idea than taking a distribution from a retirement plan that you can never put back in there. Having being approved for a little home equity line of credit and watching how much we're actually using it. And then if things never turn around, then taking money out of the retirement account to pay off that home equity line of credit would have been a much more prudent number of steps to take than just, hey, they said I could take it, let me take the money out. So that was really kind of worrisome. The Foundation for Financial Planning does pro bono work for families that can't afford financial planners. And I've been meaning to get back with the executive director there and just say, did anybody collect any data on all the pro bono financial planning that went on? Were they able to keep people from making the big mistakes of draining their wealth, right? A lot of times you can go through a bankruptcy and still keep your retirement accounts. I'm not suggesting that going through a bankruptcy is no big deal, let's get on that train, but simply saying, you know, let's protect what we've already accumulated. Make that sacred. Let's look at every other option first before we go into those retirement accounts.
Okay, CARES Act. I love your bullet point here. Cautions about the CARES Act.
Yeah.
Should we care about the CARES Act?
Right. Well, you know, and the other thing that happened with that was in the CARES Act, not only could you access your retirement money in ways that I just couldn't justify for people, you also didn't have to take a required minimum distribution. You know how those work, Bob. You're allowed to save in a retirement plan with tax advantages, but not too much and not forever. And forever was always defined as 70 and a half, and now it's defined as 72. But in the year 2020, the year that we will never forget, you didn't have to take an RMD. And I must say that I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what that meant for my 72-year-old clients. I just wanted to write a quick message to everybody and say, okay, the CARES Act says you don't need an RMD. Here's your decision tree. And it really didn't work like that. It was really such an individual decision, because some people take RMDs because they have to. Some people take RMDs because they need or want to. And if you didn't take the RMD, the required minimum distribution, what did that mean? Your account's going to be that much bigger next year, and they're going to be taking a larger distribution because your distribution is based on the size of your account and your age and a little IRS factor that we divide by, right? So it was one of those, we're going to have to talk to every single client and try to think about their taxes over a couple of years and the value of their account over a couple of years. And hey, what do you want to spend some money, or do you want to be generous with your money? Do you want to do a qualified distribution to a charity since you don't need this money right now, but all these charities that are helping everybody who's suffering in the pandemic might, that might be a good thing for you to do. So they were long and involved. Forget the little simple, you know, if this, do that, you know, if your name starts with S, get in this line. If your name starts with a B, get in that line. It was very much more complicated, I'm sure, than any legislator thought it was going to be when they tried to give people access to their retirement accounts a little bit sooner or build up wealth a little bit longer.
You know, bullseye with that. So again, with talking with people, probably more so you talk with FERS retirees and CSRS, but there still are some CSRSers that retire, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you deal with them. But the FERS folks, they have kind of a nice situation. They go, okay, I can take it from this pot, that pot, etc. And there's three revenue sources when they retire. Not all necessarily start at the same time, and probably it's best to not start the things that you have to until 70 and a half. But how do you bring that plane down for a landing when you got a pilot that maybe just doesn't understand it?
Well, and it's 72 now, right? That's what we got to keep remembering. So we know that if in an ideal situation, it would be great for every buddy to have their wealth, have some choices on how we're going to spend money in retirement. If we want to minimize the taxes in a reasonable way, we're all going to pay some taxes here. But what we like to see is some money is just personal money in your own name. It's your pension, your Social Security check. You know, those get taxed as they come in. And maybe you've got some money in a savings account, whether you spend it or not. It earns some interest, not much, but you got to report that as income. Maybe you have a little investment that spins off some dividends or income. That's your personal money. It's getting taxed. That's the money that we often say, well, let's spend that first. And then you got tax deferred money. That's the money that's in traditional accounts. If I don't spend it, it continues to earn income that I can push down the road, right? The income tax consequence. So why spend it if I've got personal money? I'll let it continue to accumulate. And then, of course, some people then ideally would have some Roth accounts. Thank you, Senator Roth, who never got reelected again, but his name is all over everything, right? R-O-T-H. If I've got money in an account with his name as the adjective, I know that when I take the money out, at least under current law, the income is tax-free. If I take the money out soon, right, it doesn't earn more. I lose that advantage. The only real advantage of having Roth money is that it gets to earn with no immediate consequence, and then from a tax point of view, and then when I take the money out, it's treated as tax-free. So, you know, normally the lens we're usually looking at is we'll spend our taxable before our tax deferred, and we'll spend our tax deferred before our Roth money. And then, if that's the lens, then we got to slow it down every year, because every year could be a little different. We might have an unusual deduction. The hip replacement didn't go well. You're going to be fine, but you hated rehab. So we've been paying $8,000 a month to have somebody make sure you don't fall and can't get up. Big deductions, right? Or maybe we just did entered retirement, got on the board of your favorite not-for-profit, and they start a capital campaign. And of course, you're going to give in a bigger way than you have before. Bigger deductions, right? Or we might have a tax law that come out of nowhere. Huh, when does that happen? frequently. And all of a sudden, all of our planning of let me spend my taxable before my tax deferred before my tax freeze is out the window, and we're juggling a little bit. Or we're really looking at, okay, you know what, if I really have to take this much money out of my plan, it's going to bounce me into a higher tax bracket. So even though I normally would want my Roth money to keep on earning its tax-free kind of gold standard income tax treatment, I'm going to take a little bit out of the Roth and stay underneath my highest marginal tax bracket. You know, it's nice that computers can do some of this number crunching for us, or it wouldn't almost be worth it to, if you had to pay somebody hundreds of dollars for an hour to get some of that marginal tax bracket this year or that year kind of planning done. But it's in big years with big swings, it's really important to take a little look at that.
All right. Yeah, I like what you said, but let's look at that. My friend got a raise and it put him into a higher tax bracket and they lost money. How do you explain to people it doesn't work like that?
It doesn't work like that. I know. Until we go back to the days, I used to teach estate planning at George Washington University, and I had an example of an inheritance that was taxed at 105%. You know, it was the generation skipping tax and the you got a bad attitude tax and everything all piled up. It was a great example. But those days kind of fell behind us in 1987 with that big tax act. And if you're making more money and paying more tax, you also are keeping more money, or at least had the choice to keep more money and spend it on whatever you wanted. We're not, I meet very few people whose last dollar in this of earnings got taxed at more than 30 something percent. So we have a progressive tax, and you know better than I how that works. The first little bit of income doesn't get taxed, and the next little bit of income gets taxed at a very low rate. And it's only my last dollar that gets taxed at my highest tax bracket, which is still lower than 50%. I'd rather earn the money. If you want to whine about the taxes, that's fine. You know, we all like to get a little grumpy pants every once in a while, but it's still better to earn the money and pay the tax than to say, I'm going to retire I'm not going to do this job because I'm paying too much in taxes.
Sometimes when I use that thought process, people actually get mad. What do you mean? Well, you know, it's unnecessary. And I said, well, it's going to be necessary sooner rather than later. We're just looking to try to keep it at its lowest cost to you, but not, you're not going to get it tax-free unless it's in exactly tax-free right. account.
Exactly right. Right. And of course, you know, it works. There's the investment world where we have these tax-free municipal bonds. And I, every once in a while, would meet somebody, they only wanted to invest in tax-free municipal bonds because the taxable bonds, right? You got to pay tax on that. So, you know, but let's look at both these bonds. It's not a secret that a municipal bond spins off tax-free income and the non-municipal bonds spin off taxable income. The market is very aware of that. So for the same kind of investment risk, the same default risk, my municipal bond is likely to pay me less than my taxable bond. And then let's get into stocks, right? Where I have an opportunity to probably make more money. Yes, I'll pay some tax, but I kept more money. So we used to, you know, when you learn about taxes and investing, you don't, the phrase was always, don't let the tax tail wag the dog. Amen. It will most likely get you to the wrong investment, which is not the same as saying ignore the tax consequences of your investments portfolio. That's why we're very aware of the difference between your personal investments versus your tax-deferred investments versus your tax-free. But let's not start out with, I want the lowest taxes possible, because it is very likely you will be growing the smallest portfolio.
Amen. I, you know, sometimes people, they don't come in as much anymore as they used to. So we talk on the phone and then they get a little agitated. Well, I'm going to have to pay tax on that. And I go, listen, I'm not a financial planner, but it seems to me it's always a great idea to pay tax on more money that you made than to pay less tax on money that you didn't make. What do you mean?
You're not a financial planner, but you talked to one on the radio and you got the memo. That's exactly what we say.
I'll say, I'm going to blame it on Karen, but don't take the blame. Listen to the show.
Right. No. Go ahead.
Final, Andrew, what do we got? About 2 minutes left, a little bit more than 2 minutes. Before we go into the 2 minutes, how does somebody get in touch with you again?
Oh, Schaefer Financials in Rockville, Maryland. And you can always pick up the phone. We still answer our phones remotely, 301-933-5550, or find us on the internet.
Okay, so with the short period of time, what's your two-minute drill?
You know, Bob, one of the things that we really didn't talk about, but I think it's a really important message, is that there's so much for so many people to be grateful about and thankful about, and that 2020 gave us such an opportunity to put taxes and investments and financial world in perspective. It's part of who we are. It isn't who we are, right? And how important it would be to have just a good financial plan in place so that you didn't have to panic, so that you didn't have to feel life as you know it is over, so that you could be generous with your time, talent, and treasure, as we say in the fundraising world. A painful but wonderful opportunity to do a reset. And I think that's an important message for an awful lot of people. So we all got our closets cleaned out early in the pandemic, and now it's time to make sure our personal financial plan, that the paperwork is in order, that the appropriate conversations are being had up and down and around the family tree, that that we have the right perspective, that money isn't everything, but people who have done a good job with, or are willing to do a good job with their personal financial decisions, really are going to be the solution.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.